Hey, good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Another Sunday morning here in Honolulu, and I'm just happy to be here and happy that you've joined us. We are many things to talk about, and a lot of you last week called after the show wanting to talk about the subject matter, and later on maybe we'll do something with that topic. Dr. Timothy Johnson and the Frederick Douglass Foundation, the Tea Party and the pot parties and whatever the going on out there. But anyway, today, you know, we quite often on the show here, we talk about various things that I've been involved in and uncovering activities with the various agencies and environmental issues and carbon monoxide fish. And sometimes these things, they just continue to play out, and we all ask, what is the final result? Well, there's really not a lot of results to be had in some of these things when you're dealing with a bureaucracy. But sometimes we get fortunate, and we are able to find someone or someone calls and want to update us, and we have just that situation. And regarding the Maʻili'ili'i stream, now this is done on conditions of anonymity. I have a young man here that actually was involved in the work and that was conducted in the Maʻili'ili'i stream while this was being dumped, the concrete and what have you. And if you notice that the mayor, Mayor Mufi Hanneman, and now acting mayor, Kirk Caldwell, and Kudamont, the manager of the roads division, claim they're conducting an investigation. And the investigation is open-ended, so it can go on and on and on. So the excuses. So we were fortunate as taxpayers to have someone to approach us and want to share with us exactly what was occurring there at the scene in the stream during this time. And I think if you listen closely, you'll find and hear some shocking things. This young man, he was motivated because it was wrong, he realized, and wanted to share with the public, but also the hardship that the taxpayer, we are losing as taxpayers, and I'm paraphrasing him, but he's concerned that it is the taxpayer who is losing. And one recent event is look in Kalihi, where the senior citizens or homeowners and property owners are having to pay a very high price now in taxes while we are squandering. And you'll hear what went on out there at Maʻili'ili'i stream under the watchful eye of the Mayor Hanneman and the City and County of Honolulu Roads Division and Maintenance Division. So I'm not going to mention his name for many reasons. One could be retaliation, but also let's just see, now we'll know the truth, and let's see what Mr. Caldwell and others will come with the truth now, if they will be willing to talk. So good morning. Thank you for joining me. I won't call you Malcolm, because then they'll say Malcolm X, but I'll call you Mr. X. But thank you for joining me, and if you would, basically, you worked out in the stream doing this work, and about what period of time did this occur?
Well, this occurred back in 2007, mm-hmm. About October and November we started that project out there in Maʻili'ili'i stream. And we had direct orders from the superintendent out there that we were going to make a road. So we had to start from the Pākehā side of the gate where they open up the gate there, mm-hmm. at Pākehā. Mm-hmm. And we started to cut our way in. There was a lot of kiawe trees, a lot of brush. So, you know, that's where we started it. Mm-hmm. It basically involved a lot of cutting of trees,
mm-hmm.
and cutting the brush back, and then trying to get the heavy equipment in there to kind of grade a road there to get into mm-hmm. the back.
Mm-hmm. Now, when we say a road, you know, they represented that they were building a road in the river, inside the river. That's why they placed the concrete. But you're saying the road that was built was up on the top level outside of the stream, correct?
Correct. The road that when we was first informed about building this was up on the top side where mm-hmm. the trucks could get and the tractor mower that would cut the brush back after mm-hmm. we would finish that project. That's the road that we knew of.
Mm-hmm. But not putting concrete in the river to make a road. That was not the intention.
I think once we kind of got into the project and then they got into the to where we had to look how we're going to get into that stream bed
mm-hmm.
and cut down all of that kiawe trees, that brush, and there was a water bed in there, like a stagnant water.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's when they kind of decided that they were going to go put some kind of a concrete to get the machinery in there.
Right, to keep it from sinking because it was a wetlands area and bogged down, right?
Right.
So are we looking at the amount of concrete that was dumped? How much would you say to the listeners, and was there other things when there were rebar and trees, and about how deep would you say that goes?
Well, first of all, there's a lot of, besides the concrete that's buried there, you know, there's a lot of root balls, you know, from the trees
mm-hmm.
that we couldn't cut up. They smashed all that down in the stream, too,
mm-hmm.
and then covered it with concrete. And mm-hmm. I know that concrete, it came from the broken sidewalks, like, you know, if somebody... There was a problem in the, you know, a city and county street. The sidewalk mm-hmm. had to be repaired. And, you know, the laborers go out there, they bust it up. And we take the broken concrete and we stockpile it in the yard. So a lot of that concrete probably had a lot of rebar in it.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that is in the stream.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty thick. I can't really tell you, you know, I read in the paper that it might have been about 300 truckloads, but... It's probably more than that, and
mm-hmm.
and it's not just like it's a layer of concrete, like
mm-hmm.
you know,
right.
12 inches, or it's piled up, you know,
mm-hmm.
and it's compacted down into the.
So it could be many feet high, thick, and then the rebar, and then you say they crushed the root balls of the trees and pushed them down in the mud too.
Yes.
So. The superintendent there was Thomas Linchenko, is that right, out of the Waianae yard? And what yard were you working out of specifically?
Yeah, I was working out of the Waianae yard,
mm-hmm.
and Thomas Linchenko is the superintendent out there.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you could describe for the listeners, how did this overtime, or how were you compensated? Was it just done on normal hours? Or was there overtime involved, and how often was overtime paid?
When we started that project, we really didn't have too much overtime until we started that project. And we started working overtime 7 days a week. There
mm-hmm.
was overtime.
Mm-hmm.
Sundays, Saturday, Sundays was about 8 to 10 hours, depending how the management felt about how long we were going to work that day.
Mm-hmm.
On the weekdays, depending on the darkness, we probably got about maybe 3.5 hours,
mm-hmm.
you know, on a weekday of overtime.
So this overtime, unlike what we had originally been told by sources, was that it was weekends. You're saying that overtime was paid 7 days a week and 8 to 10 hours on weekends. And 3.5 to 4 hours on weekday, every day?
Every day.
So, and we're looking at a period of what, a year and 4 months, 5 months from October, November 2007 to the time we discovered it in 2009? of June, July?
I wouldn't say that. I would say maybe it ran about, from what I can say for myself, mm-hmm. about 6 to 8 months.
So 6 to 8 months of overtime.
Yes.
7 days a week and weekend. So there were people there also, not just the truckers. Where did they come from? What yards? What was some of the sources of this concrete?
I think while I was there, I encountered probably the Wahiwa Corporation Yard, guys dropping off material from there, probably Pearl City Yard, and also the Halava Yard.
Mm-hmm. And they trucked it in from those yards, correct? And they were stockpiling it there, at their yards?
Yeah, it was kind of like they had to they would dump it, and then the heavy machinery would kind of spread it out, and then mm-hmm. they would kind of go deeper and deeper until it laid a road out there in that stream bed.
Mm-hmm. And let me ask you this. Since this thing came public, did anyone ever contact you to conduct an interview? That the mayor, anybody, the police department, if you're Coudemont or your superintendent, did anyone ever call you in for a formal investigation to ask you questions if you'd seen anything or knew anything?
Not me. They haven't contacted me.
So, you being working there, they would have, if they were conducting an investigation like the public, do you think that you would have been one of the people they would have talked to?
I don't think so. I really don't think that they would have asked us.
I mean, if they were trying to get the truth, I mean, you wouldn't just go and ask everyone and leave some out, right, if you're doing an investigation. But no one ever contacted you?
No. No.
So, how then, now, you being a worker there, you don't just make the hours, but when you would put the hours in or work, perform those hours, how were they reported, and what was your role, and who took those hours and recorded them, and who submitted them formally to be paid? Can you explain that process and who it was?
Well, as a city employee, you're told in the morning that there's going to be overtime,
mm-hmm.
and they're not forcing you to work overtime, but they tell you that overtime is available, and you do not submit a timesheet. The supervisor, he's not the superintendent. He's the supervisor that mm-hmm. goes out on the road. So he keeps the time. They tell you how much hours we're gonna work, and you kind of just keep tabs of your own hours mm-hmm. on a separate piece of paper.
And then you submit them to him, or how does that work?
No, the supervisor submits the overtime to payroll.
Okay. And who was that supervisor on that job site?
It could be anywhere from, it could be the superintendent, which would be Thomas Linchenko, mm-hmm. or it could be Kalani Tachibana.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so then they would write up a formal submittal.
Yes, that's correct.
So it would be easy for them to track the overtime, huh?
Yes, I think it would be easy to track that because they input that onto their computers.
Mm-hmm.
Also, with any type of overtime project that we're doing, usually the working supervisor goes out and usually snaps some pictures mm-hmm. of the beginning of the project that we're on,
mm-hmm.
and then when we're finished the project, he usually snaps the finished product so mm-hmm. that we they're looking at, you know, if they have to submit anything that it's justified by, you know, mm-hmm. by the camera.
So the supervisor would take pictures before, during, and after, and then submit it in a formal report to management.
Yes.
So, in this case, was that done?
I'm pretty sure I seen one of the working supervisors snap some pictures out there
mm-hmm.
In the beginning,
mm-hmm.
And I'm sure at the end too.
Okay, so, and that was done and put into in the computer, as you described, and put in a report. So they would be able to just go back and pull up the computer and the pictures and the report, if obviously accountability, right?
Yes.
Now, what happens is you were telling me earlier about not only was it just putting concrete, you were concerned about the abuse of overtime, what you felt that the supervisors were doing. And clearly, when you're a worker, you're a captive audience. If you speak out in this climate in the city, and I would say from what I've learned, the city agencies are run like mini mafia, because if you speak out, you're off. And in turn, management will not support you. They will see your head roll down the sidewalk quicker than they would see the offending supervisor or the superintendent. And the public is not aware of that, but that is the climate. Grown men are running around literally afraid to speak or breathe more than once if they, because anything normal that you would expect in a normal working environment, in the city and county of Honolulu, there is an unspoken word that if you buck the system, you're out in the worst way, and you're done. So the public doesn't know that. They don't know that, but we're spending our tax dollars. And I was really impressed when you said that it's about the taxpayer. It's if we only knew what we were losing and the waste. But speaking of waste, now, there were gentlemen assigned up there to work in the stream solely for the purpose of running chainsaws and cutting. The majority of their work in that stream was what, cutting trees with a chainsaw?
Yes. There's only a few of us that were able to, operate the chainsaws up there. Mm-hmm. And
so some of those workers were able to, you don't know all of their names, huh?
No, I don't.
Okay. But so you observed them cutting wood, and when they cut the wood, what would they do? No, I don't want to sound like I'm making a joke here, but when they cut the wood, they would do what with the wood? The trunk of the tree or the main portion of the tree. You had told me they were transporting it back to the yard. Can you talk about that and then the cost and the waste that you observed?
Yeah, up in my Ilili stream, what we would do is we would cut down the tree. So we'd cut it down in a big, a big section. You know, we'd drop the whole tree down in the stream. Mm-hmm. And then what we'd do is we'd kind of cut it so it would fit in the truck.
Mm-hmm.
So the loaders would pick it up, put it in the dump truck, transport it back to the yard, and stockpile it in the yard.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of the overtime that was, I don't want to say if I cannot say, 'cause I don't do paperwork,
mm-hmm.
but if it's if it was charged to that, but there was a lot of weekend work that was just staying in the yard and cutting up kiawe into, you know, barbecue sizes and stuff like that, and we're stockpiling it. We had like a big old warehouse of just kiawe wood that was just stockpiled.
And did the city sell this kiawe wood to make a profit and put it back in taxpayers' coffers, or was it used for personal? And if so personal, who were allowed to take the wood?
I don't think it was sold by the city, but it was just that there was just certain people that was able to take the wood.
Mm-hmm.
It was controlled by the superintendent out there, and I'm pretty sure that they probably still got it.
Well, after speaking with you the other day, I did in fact drive over there to the new yard at Campbell, and sure enough, in this big, beautiful shed that taxpayers have spent a couple of $100,000 to build and pave and place, Mr. Linchenko has humongous Keawe wood logs, I mean, trees with a girth about 6 or 7 feet wide in diameter, just perfectly cut up and stacked in the shed. So when I asked him, what is the Keawe wood, why do you have it there? Well, it was in the way of traffic, and, you know, when trees are spread out and the limbs hang over the tree, over the roads, and you can't get the trucks in, well, then why don't you cut it down and haul it to the dump? Why do you haul it back here using taxpayers' dollars? But I didn't explain to him that you had informed me that workers from the city and county of Honolulu spent time cutting firewood for friends and special people within the city and county of Honolulu, and other people that were, that he had selected. So taxpayers' dollars were spent on weekends, and this went on for about 3 months, you say?
I say about 3 months.
Every weekend?
Every weekend.
But did you ever cut any of that firewood? Well, out in the stream, you had to cut it down, and with the specific intent of this wood being hauled to the facility at Waianae. So they wasted taxpayers' dollars there on cutting wood in the stream, then cutting it up in bite-sized pieces to manage it and put it on the truck using the loader, using a heavy equipment operator, paying him overtime, using the truck driver, paying him overtime, then using the chainsaw guys to cut the trees, that's paying overtime in the stream, and then hauling it to the Waianae yard where you would see them doing the same thing over again, paying them overtime there on weekends, 8 to 10 hours to cut up firewood, Keawe, I should say, to give to their friends and special people. And when they close the Waianae yard, they then move it over, truck it, taxpayers' dollars, truck the wood with the driver, overtime and all, and haul it to the new yard. And I took some pictures there. They had a guy there with a scowl on his face that, I mean, I have gone in my professional work in the past, gone into drug houses and didn't get as the greater scrutiny as I got over there. I've dealt with criminals who were more relaxed than the guard there at the city yard. So I wonder what else they're doing. What are the other things are they stealing from us? But, you know, there might be a few people out there want to ask them questions. 524-1080, 524-1080. If you have a question for or a comment or want to share, if you're a city worker and want to share with us, the taxpayers and all out there that have a story that you can bring, we need to hold these people accountable. And you know, here's a perfect example. We say that the city workers are all unethical and whatever. Right here is proof. In many occasions, all of the information that I ever get from these sources are city workers, but they'd be damned if they spoke out. So, and you, the taxpayer, you hear these stories and you get motivated for about 5 minutes, and they have to work there forever. So raise some heck about this. Raise some cane. But anyway, speaking of waste, you told me a story about, and we're going to move, and we'll get back to the Maile stream, but you talked about where they claimed they didn't know about that it was wrong to dump the concrete in the river. Aren't you guys responsible, that same department responsible for cleaning out the manholes and the storm drains to keep trash from being flowing down the river? Can you explain that?
Well, yeah, that's another part of the job there is, you know, it also has to deal with the Clean Water Act. And, you know, there was an occasion when we was out there that we had this training situation that we went through with the superintendent out there. And he took us up to this new subdivision they had out there. And they put in this new type of drainage system. It was a contractor, a private contractor. And we had to open up all the manholes and check if there was any debris in there, if the water was flowing correctly. And we was being trained by the superintendent out there and being told that this is about the Clean Water Act and about things flowing into the ocean. And then we go up in Mailili Stream, and then we dump concrete, and then what's going to happen with that flowing into the stream? You know, what happened to the Clean Water Act?
Yeah, well, maybe he thought what he'd do when it flushed down the stream, he'd send his guys over in the manhole and dig it out real quick. Or, you know, I'm being facetious. But these are perfect examples where when they say they didn't know, management said, Coudemont, Kurt Caldwell, and others, in their defense, in defending these people or trying to cover it up, they call it a defense, I call it a cover-up, is that they know, by law, these people are required to know this. And they know the Clean Water Act because their leader, the mayor, was sitting there arguing with the EPA about Sand Island and other places. So it's not about knowledge, it's not about ignorance, it's about criminality.
Yeah, I wanna say this, I want to protect the working man out there, the city worker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there, like you said earlier, it's kind of like a militia or some a family of Italians. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like the syndicate. You know, and
well,
you know, you don't say anything. You're just a worker.
The Italians calling up and get. But I understand what you're saying. There are a lot of godfathers out there. I've noticed that. And yesterday, when I went out to that yard, if that gentleman could have shot me on the spot, he would have, if he thought he could get away with it. And all I wanted to do was talk to Tom Linchenko.
Yeah, out there in Waianae. I know when I worked out there in Waianae, it's run by the man. And that man is the superintendent out there.
Mm-hmm.
And you do what you're told, or else, like you say, you're going to be on the outs.
Mm-hmm. And there are many workers out there. Now, one other thing. Can you tell me about, you did potholes. You know, that was one of the mayor's pet peeves and whatever. And we're talking about waste of money. What is it that you know an incident, a couple incidents regarding potholes and patching them and the waste of taxpayers' dollars. Can you talk about that?
Well, we had some pothole patching out there in Waianae, and I guess the size of the crew that we had out there maybe were about seven or eight workers. What happens in the morning is the supervisors, the superintendent, they order the mix, which is the asphalt mix that we're going to lay down in the pothole patching. And I guess there was an incident out there quite a few times that they ordered mix, and for a 7-8 man crew they ordered like 20 tons of mix, and they didn't stagger it. They brought two trucks at the same time
to pick it up.
To pick it up, and they brought it back to Waianae to lay it down at the same time. Now, I mean, and for 7 or 8 guys to lay down two trucks, by the time you get to the second truck, it's the asphalt will be so cold, it'd be so hard, you won't even be able to get it out of the back of the truck. So I think pretty much there was a couple of times where we threw it away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one truck. Maybe we laid down one truck and threw away another truck. I mean, and that's taxpayers' dollars. I mean, but and it's told, it's because we're told by the management, because it's because the federal government allotted these monies
right
for the roads division to use.
Mm-hmm.
So we're gonna just use it.
Use it.
We're not really doing anything with it because we threw it away in the bushes.
So where was this done? Where did they throw it in one site? Where did they throw it in the bushes? You don't have to be specific location, but roughly Parkhair Road, Hakima Road,
yeah.
Alan-Waianae. Whereabouts? Where
yeah,
was it?
Whereabouts? About there, about Parkhair Road up there in the back, you know, where nobody can see.
Mm-hmm. So, and they've done this more than once.
Yes.
So The listeners probably with a mixture of what it is. It's just asphalt, and sometimes some of the listeners probably seen guys following a truck, scooping it out, and putting it in the pothole and patting it down, and that's hot. It's hot, and it's workable. And so they went out and got two truckloads, 10 ton each, let's say, and they go out and they only have 7 men that'll do the job that could manage that. And by the time they get use the first truck up, that's 10 ton, and God only knows how much that costs. And once they use that up and get ready to use the other 10 tons, it's too hard to use, so they dumped it in the grass.
Yes.
And this has occurred more than once, but they just spend the money because the federal government says, this is money you have.
Yes, yes, that's what I believe.
Wow. But... just sounds like the piggy bank is just out there in Wyandotte, and the city is just swelling to the sides. And how does that make you feel? You've shared it with me for taxpayers. How do you feel about that when you see this, and then you read paper that here is a workers are out there throwing 10 ton of asphalt in the grass?
Yeah, Carol, it makes me feel upset because there's a lot of things that the public don't know,
mm-hmm.
what's going on, and it's not really about the city worker. It's about the guys that's in charge. You know,
mm-hmm.
they're just mismanaging city money,
mm-hmm.
and you know you got we're in an election year this year, and we're asking like we got Kirk Caldwell, we got Carlisle, and we're asking questions. What are they going to do? You know, we need to ask them, what are they going to do about these people that are wasteful in city spending, and what are they going to do? There's not much they probably really can do because these people are protected by the union.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I guess when they figure this out, that we needed a con so we can probably get back to... looking at the constitutional rights of the unions and the
mm-hmm.
union members, and you know, and fixing all of that problems, then city government will probably be more efficient.
Right.
But until we get to that point, then you know, there's nothing that's really going to be done. This thing is going to continue to go on.
Yeah, the blind stealing us blind. Anyway, Bob, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. I would like to thank your guest there for coming on and putting himself on the line there, because it takes a lot of, you know, integrity to do what you're doing, sir. So I applaud you, okay?
Well, thank you.
The bottom line is, when you're talking about 10 ton in the bushes of asphalt, yeah, that's when I had the car, you know. You know, the thing is, the con just passed us by, brother. You know what I mean? We lost our chance. I don't know why the public didn't wake up to the call.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, but it still can be. If Carlisle and the city prosecutors and the federal U.S. attorneys start to look into this, unions can go to jail, too. I mean,
bust the damn union, whatever it takes.
Well, it's kind of hard to bust them when here is Hanneman. This is all under his watch, and then guess who's supporting Hanneman?
Yeah, well don't get to Hanneman. I advise everybody out there, don't get him in any office anymore, because he perpetuated what was going on for years. And I'm pretty sure, like the gentleman was saying, this is something that's just not the last couple of years. It's been going on for a long time.
Yeah.
And each progressing, you know, mayor just carries on tradition.
And you know, Caldwell has taken up the baton, and boy.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
I mean,
right.
Come out of nowhere. We look at his political choices, how he lost his butt every time he tried, and now all of a sudden he's a wizard. So, you know. But anyway, this is the only town that, I have to give a shout out to Governor Linda Lingle. I love it. Things are changing when we have the Emperor, Dan Inouye, speak publicly that he's on bending knees. That means, that's proof we need checks and balances. And if the Governor Lingle leave us with nothing, that moment is a reminder that everybody can be had. Everybody can be contained, and so the unions and the Hannemans And all those people in the Caldwells who think that they can rob us and rip us off, one day they may be found in court on bending knees.
Well, that's my little fairy tale dream, you know, wet dream. I get all these guys in front of a real live judge.
I got children listening to this show, Rob. Go ahead.
Yeah, but the bottom line is, you know, let's keep it up. You know what I mean? It's the only way, you know, this is election year. Whatever choice there is the best.
Yep.
Let's go for that one. He may not be the perfect candidate, you know, to change this thing around, but we have to have stop. That Trevor Boris guy, the engineer, if he's here, look under some, you know, covers, you know, because these guys, like I said, the union, you can fire these guys for, you know, just, well, subordinates, get that.
Yep.
You know, as far as I'm concerned, it's all theft from the taxpayer.
We're
being stolen from every single day.
Yeah. Well, I got another call about
that. Okay, you guys have a good week.
Hey, good hearing from you, and thanks for joining. Ed, good morning. How are you? Got a question, a statement, come in?
All around the world, but I just got specific incidents of dumping 10 tons of unused asphalt. But that one incident, there must be 100 tons dumped in somebody's private property. Hopefully, Carl, you can go get some photographs of these hardened piles of asphalt so we can see it. And find out whose property dumped it on. Is it government property, city property, or whatever?
Well,
it's dumped. So this, I wish I'd known about it. I would have to have dropped some off in my driveway. I could have paved my driveway. But anyway, there must be tons of it.
Yeah, Bob, out in the LIA yard, I've been out there watching, and there's been some activity out there where a coal plane is being hauled to a private citizen's, in fact, city workers' yard. The superintendent is permitting it, but that's, once again, one other fraudulent act perpetrated on the people or the taxpayers. And like I say, imagine the people in Kalihi having to go out and scrap up money now to pay their taxes, and here we're wasting 10 tons of asphalt. We're wasting overtime and cutting kiavi wood so that the city can have barbecues.
Well,
you know, I'm
talking about the people in Kalihi. I hope the owner of one of those residential properties have been rezoned to commercial, because the value has probably jumped maybe 300% in value because it's rezoned from residential to commercial.
Mm-hmm.
Commercial property, being in the real estate business, is much more valuable than residents. So they're sitting on a gold mine, and of course they may not have the funds to pay the increased taxes, but
mm-hmm.
some arrangement should be made where these taxes are deferred and due and payable when the property is sold or when a person dies.
Well,
and then it's deducted from the proceeds.
Well, that's
so that could be done.
That sounds good, economic management and business sense, but the problem
they're in economic distress, you know.
But here's the problem.
And they're all older people, so they're not going to be around that much longer.
Right.
And that will prohibit them from by collecting tax on debt or sale.
Right.
Just prohibit them from, you know, giving the property to the heirs and continuing not having to pay tax.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, that's a chunk. Okay, thanks for listening.
All right, thanks. Yeah, the bigger point here, though, is no matter who's taking taxes, and if we delay it, they're ripping us off. They're taking the tax dollars that they're collecting from us and dumping it in the grass along Park Hill Road, putting it in the barbecue grill and burning it to barbecue meat that they bought from overtime. They used to probably eat cheap steaks. Now they're eating high on the hog, so to speak. Huh? So that's the real issue. It's a shame. It's a crime that we would be allowing that kind of behavior with little or no oversight. So that's a bigger problem. So what else have you seen that you could share with the taxpayer? Any other incidences or what have you?
Well, I guess what I seen as a city worker is that let me share this. What I've been seeing about this investigation going on, I've seen a couple of hearings at the city council, and I've seen people answer some questions, and there's a lot of deception and lies that are occurring in these hearings.
And who's doing the lying and the perception? Who's presenting it?
I guess you got that frontline administration people like Mr. Kudamat.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Kudamat, I don't think he really knows the answers.
Mm-hmm.
But what we should be doing is bringing the people that know the answers, some of the names that was brought forth today,
mm-hmm.
put them in the hearings, put them on, and let them answer the questions.
Right.
Because they're like you said earlier, they're not gonna tell you the truth, because this has been going on for a long, long time.
Right. And if you are a city worker and you go in and tell the truth, the way the game's played, folks, is that the director of the city and county environmental services, and this falls under the city and county environmental services, and also the roads division, because the city and county has an environmental division, clean water, so they should have been checking. So we're paying people to do this job and inspect facilities and what have you, and work sites. Where were they? So this really speaks of a system that's poorly managed, badly broken, and criminal. And I say that because I have the goods, I know the facts on most of these cases that I've dealt with. It always involved criminality. They know about it, they have a knowledge, they're experts, they're obligated to know about it. It's their job to know. That's why they get paid so handsomely. But it must be not enough, because they're stealing from us. But anyway, it's difficult to sit and have you come and speak out the truth, and knowing that we have to conceal your identity, because you would be banished from any kind of job. They don't just keep you from working in the city or will fire you. They make it their business to work ahead of you, so if you went to a private business, they would call ahead and say, and a lot of these companies are donating to Hanneman and what have you, so people really don't understand the magnitude of this criminal element that exists within city government. I just saw a report where they said that Chicago was one of the most criminal cities, and this Illinois was one of the most criminal states in the United States. I think somebody was kind to Honolulu, because from what I know, there is not a single agency, even in the state agencies. And for example, there is a city roads crew, the state airports division. They have furlough Friday. So they all take off on Friday. And then on Saturday now, they're rescheduling them to come in on Saturdays and do nothing, and work along Lagoon Drive, walking out there, clipping a few plants. They're making work, and then now they get time and a half for the weekend.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's kind of like what the public don't really know, is that, you know, when we're offered overtime in the city and county, you might not be able to come to work for 2 days. You can call in sick, take
mm-hmm.
a vacation.
Mm-hmm.
You come the other 3 days. You make it up on overtime, because overtime is paid after 8 hours. Not like most private companies, they pay you after 40 hours.
Right.
In government, it's after 8 hours.
Wow.
You know, so I'm working 12 hours. So now
mm-hmm.
I'm getting paid sick leave, vacation or whatever sick leave, and then I come in for the other 3 days. I can work Saturday and Sunday. I'm going to make money.
And then you're going to make time and a half, right? Because if it's
That's
overtime,
right.
What is it? Time and a half. So we as taxpayers didn't just lose overtime. We lost time and a half. So I don't know where do we go from here, but I watch these ads and I watch the advertisements and the political campaign speeches and what have you. And I saw this Ed Case's comments. I've always said that Hanneman is there's just criminal. The entire administration is criminal. And I wish someone, he would come and I would provide him with that information. But instead, he sends a memo to ban me from these facilities. You would think he would embrace my efforts, because he's managing taxpayers' concerns and welfare and the well-being of the taxpayer. He's not managing Moosley Hanneman, Inc., right? But he's now gone, but then he took his mannequin and left him there. And now the mannequin is squawking the same thing. That's Kurt Carlisle, you know. He doesn't have a clue, but he knows that. Just tell them you're doing an investigation. Just put on a smile and we're investigating it. So the infrastructure here is riddled with holes and weevils in it and termites and criminals. And yet, they're telling us we're investigating it. You know, they have industries that they investigate. Millions of eggs, for example, and they can come up and find out what salad field or what field lettuce came from. And here the city and county of Honolulu can't find out anything. So anyway, that's about it. I appreciate you coming in, and would you come back and join me if I'm going to come up with some more information. And I understand now, I looked at the agenda for the city and county of Honolulu, that there's going to be on the agenda as a meeting for the infrastructure and the City and County Infrastructure Committee to address this matter. And so hopefully they're listening, and I'll get them a copy of this tape. Well, thank you for joining us, and really appreciate you helping us out and coming
thank
forward.
You. Thank you, Cal.
Thank you. Aloha.
Aloha.
Yeah, well, we're going to... I have a little brief bit of announcement here on regarding the Gandhi International Institute for Peace. I don't know if you all out there know about this, but I am going to let you know about this. And I have a real quick guest here for and Dr. Kumar, Raj Kumar. Good morning, Dr.
Good morning.
How are you?
How you doing?
All righty. Can you tell us what's going on with this event real quick?
We are holding this event on October 2nd. It's Mahatma Gandhi's birthday and International Day of Nonviolence. This is open to public. It's free. And we would like to invite public to come and join us and give us the support to celebrate the one of the world's greatest leader, Mahatma Gandhi, who created transformation. And people all around the world celebrate his birthday. Even in India, it's a national holiday. So we would like to invite all of you folks, students, teachers, educators, social leaders, government leaders, spiritual leaders, and public and tourists. Please join us on October 2nd, 10 a.m. outside of Honolulu Zoo. Parking is free. Please join us and celebrate Mahatma Gandhi's birthday on October 2nd, 10 a.m.
And you will be...
I'll be the host.
The host.
And organizer.
Can other groups join you? Or
yes.
What can they do?
Yeah, we are having an interfaith discussion for world peace, and we will have multicultural dances, and we will have Royal Hawaiian Band, who will play national anthem of India, U.S., and Hawaii Ipono song.
Now, can people donate to this program?
Yes, it's a non-profit organization. People can donate, and we will send them the letter, a receipt. They can write it off. Yes.
Okay, so Dr. Kumar, go ahead.
We need some volunteer and donations. Yes, that would be great.
Okay, how do they contact you real quick?
Our website is gandhianpeace.com. My email is rkumarhi@yahoo.com. And my cell number is 808-372-1444.
Okay, well, thank you.
Oh, thanks for having me here.
And we'll keep getting this word out on this. And,
please do so.
You know, we'll
it's for a noble cause. It's for world peace.
Okay, and we're gonna. There's gonna be on Pathways of Paradise. They're gonna run this Carol Cox talking again about the Oahu issues.
Okay.
And that's just a little footnote. We're going to run that.
So okay.
Thank you, Dr. Kumar.
Sure. Thanks
and,
for having me here.
We'll see you again
we
soon.
We appreciate your support.
All righty.
See you there on October 2nd.
Okay.
Aloha.
Aloha. Okay. Thank you. And we are going to close out and hopefully... some of this get to some of you out there. It's disheartening. I don't pretend to be a newspaper guy or a media guy. I'm just trying to bring the public the facts, and it's painful watching And some of you move, you look at these political announcements and you're confused as to who to vote for. And I'm saying, no, we need to contact the FBI. Each one of those, I'm incensed personally when I see these things now. The lies, the claim that, for example, Carlisle says that he's fixed Hanama Bay and on and on and on, and Hanneman says he's worked at things. Show us the money. Show us who you gave it to. That's what I'm looking for. Let's send somebody to jail, not to the state capitol, not to the city council. Let's send someone to jail. That's the only thing that's going to give us good government. To heck with their management style. They've already shown us that. Let's send someone, some of these guys, to jail. That's where they need to be. Okay, take care.
And tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show on K108.